Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, there's going to be some very excited ladies and lads around the country now because I'm joined by a pop star, actor and heartthrob. He's someone who was a huge part of life for many of us growing up in the 80s and 90s, and he's still going strong. Jason Donovan, you're very welcome.
Brendan, good to see you.
It's good to see you as well, except I can't see you. Where are you and what are you wearing?
I'm currently in Norwich, which is in England, and it's a beautiful day. And I've just come inside. I was doing a bit of drawing outside, so I'm in my shorts, but I've decided not to give you the visual aspect of this moment.
Okay, listen, I think that conjures up a nice image for women of a certain age out there. Jason is still rocking a pair of shorts. You'd be on stage in the Borgash Theatre in Dublin soon in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. But so you've kindly picked for us today five songs
yes.
that will bring you back to different parts of your life. So, Jason, we like to start off with a little bit of background and childhood and set the scene and stuff. So people might not know this, but you kind of grew up in showbiz. Your parents were both actors, but your dad was a really well-known actor in Australia, wasn't he? Tell us about Terence.
Well, my parents split up when I was five. My father got custody of me. My dad is still alive. His name is Terence Donovan. He was an actor, and I guess in his own mind, maybe he still is a bit of an actor. But he's nearly 90 years old, my father. Yeah, and I spent a lot of time in my childhood with my dad. And, you know, he was in television, he was in film, he was also in theatre and musicals. So, you know, we were best mates and still are in a way. And I guess watching him perform and, you know, being picked up from school by my dad and then going on set, being at home at night times and sometimes reading through lines that he was learning for the next day's filming. You know, I always harbored this vision of becoming an actor, but the reality, you know, I knew was difficult. I was surrounded by mostly out of work actors as I grew up. So
it's really nice that you say that you and Terence were best mates, because it's probably more unusual back then that a kid would be raised just by their father. I presume
Correct.
Custody usually went to the mother. So was it just the two of you, yeah?
Yeah, it was. My gran, who was from England, did come over and live with us for a while, and my father did have a long-term relationship, but it wasn't really until I guess my stepmother, Marlene, who is still a big part of my life, even though my dad and Marlene are not together anymore, it was, you know, until she sort of came along that my dad and I were probably, you know, as close as one could be. But yes, you're right, Brendan. It is extremely unique for a father to get custody, I think, in 1972 it was, in Australia.
Yeah. And what kind of kid were you then? I suppose, like, you see, when you came into our lives, I suppose you seemed like that kind of uncomplicated, maybe surfy kind of Aussie type of guy with long blonde hair and stuff. Is that what you were?
I think I was.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm probably more complicated today than I've ever been. Maybe that's down to overthinking in my life a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I had a very sort of middle class upbringing in Australia, Melbourne. It's a beautiful town. You know, I went to a college called De La Salle College. You know, I wasn't an incredibly academic student, but I always worked hard. You know, and the beach, that sort of lifestyle in Australia is, and swimming particularly, is part of how we, you know, we sort of exist. You know, I would do the odd audition, and I did quite a bit of work in my early teens as an actor, I guess through my dad's connections.
And was Terence supportive of you being an actor?
He was always supportive, but he was always pretty adamant that, you know, school should come first. And there is a great story, Brennan. I don't know whether you're aware, but in 1983 or 84, I auditioned for this TV show called Neighbours. And I was coming into my final year at school. I auditioned for the part of Danny Ramsey. Okay. And I got the part. And then I was in a very difficult position because I had to decide between my school and my last year of finishing what was 12 years of school or pursuing this professional career. And I went around and I asked all the teachers at the school and what they thought I should do. And unanimously, they all said, leave, take this opportunity.
That was a great vote of confidence in you as a student.
Yeah, exactly. My academia, my scholastic abilities was on the floor, my confidence more to the point. And I said to Dad, you know, what do you think I should do? And he said to me, don't take the part. You don't, you know, you'd be crazy. You'll never go back to school. And it will be a sort of an uncompleted puzzle in your life. So I actually took his advice, okay. Which was really difficult for a, you know, a 16-year-old boy who thought he could earn a wage, you know, and feel like a grown-up as it was.
Yeah, yeah.
I turned the part down and literally 12 months to the day, I went in and auditioned for a character called Scott Robinson. And that really changed the landscape of my professional and also my life, I guess.
I can imagine. So when did it start dawning on you, or how long did it take for the thing to become the phenomenon it became? And I guess particularly so huge a part of our lives up here in both Ireland and the UK.
I think particularly with the Scott and Charlene wedding, I suppose that's when the gravity of the enormity of those two characters and the impact that those two characters, and not just those two characters, but the show itself on not just Australia, because it was becoming huge in Australia, but the rest of the world. And in those days, Brendan, it was fan mail, really. And it was about getting all these requests from media outlets, satellite television, crossovers from, you know, TVAM in London to the set of Neighbours. You really started to get a feel of that this was something, you know, phenomenal and quite special.
Yeah. I remember up here, just to give you an idea of what it was like. So, like, there were actually, so adults would watch it, kids would watch it, but I particularly remember that there were guys I knew in college who would time sparking up their first joint of the day at lunchtime to get into Neighbours at that point and to be ready for the afternoon showing of it. So listen, that kind of brings us on to your first music choice today. People who know will understand the connections here, but tell me first why you picked Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Well, I mean, I know Rick. I obviously, you know, worked with Stockache and Waterman. There was a record that came along, I think it was in 1987, that really just stood apart from all the other sounds at the time. And, you know, growing up, I was very much into, you know, alternate music, New Order, Heaven 17, The Cure, The Psychedelic Furs, lots of alternate dance music. But with Rick, and I've never been prejudicial with my music. I love pop, but there was something just fresh and up and positive about Never Gonna Give You Up. And that sound, that Lynn drum sound that became so synonymous with Stockache and Waterman. But more to the point, the melody, you know, and Rick's sort of wonderful tone. You know, it was just a record that to this day makes me feel good. And I think that's what pop can be about. And it doesn't need to make excuses for the fact that it can just make you feel great.
And probably, just before we play it, for people's timeline on things, at this point, You weren't working with Stock Aitken and Waterman. You didn't know.
No, I wasn't.
You didn't know
no,
what they were or anything, but you heard record, and it's one that still stands the test of time. Here's Jason Donovan's first choice today, very generously choosing his Stock Aitken and Waterman stablemate. I believe he was the tea boy in the studios, wasn't he? And then
I believe
one day
so.
Produced this, Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. Rick Astley there, Never Going to Give You Up, and that's Jason Donovan's first music choice today. So Jason, maybe explain to me then, so that obviously Stock Aitken and Waterman kind of owned the charts there for a number of years. How did you end up hooking up with them and making that leap into being a pop star?
Well, I mean, it sort of goes back to my dad, I guess, in, you know, the foundations of the question really is about music. I mean, I never got into this business to become famous. The fame was a byproduct of what I did, which was act. And, you know, my dad always reminded me that this bubble that I was in, particularly with Neighbours, was probably going to burst and that I needed to be as versatile as I possibly could be. And music has always been something that, as a child growing up, listening to Beatles and ABBA and, you know, Kiss or whoever it might have been, you know, the Australian music that I loved at the time. Singing was always something I watched my dad do on stage in musicals. I don't think it's a secret to know that Kylie and myself spent a lot of time out of work hours together. And she was, you know, she was a big, you know, singer. And so, you know, I was watching a lot of what she was doing. At the time, she had success with Locomotion, which was huge in Australia. I sort of looked at that quite jealously and realised that maybe I needed to get myself into gear and sort of work on my singing. And I guess with her success, one thing sort of led to another, and I was next.
And listen, you became hugely successful very quickly. I mean, to give younger people a reference point, like you were probably Harry Styles level famous, but really suddenly. Was it? And you say fame wasn't your reason for getting into it, and you seem like quite a kind of a thoughtful, grounded person. Was that all really overwhelming at the time? I mean, when you came up to Britain and you're greeted with, you know, screaming girls wherever you went and mobbed and stuff, was that all a lot?
Yeah, success is a funny one. You know, I mean, for me, it's pretty well known that every action has a reaction. And, you know, the 90s were more of a difficult era. Yeah. And I was aware that what comes up will go down. Nothing can really prepare you for that, particularly as a young man or as a young person growing up.
But yeah, I'm imagining too that, like, you could possibly feel a bit trapped in something as well, in the sense that you very much, like the way you talk now, you're into New Order and all that thing. You were clearly an edgy enough kid. And then suddenly you have to be this boy next door. And then the fact that you and Kylie are in a relationship and, like, the pressure on that, how invested people were in your relationship, how gutted people were when you broke up and all that. That's hard, a hard box to be in for a young man, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think there was a rebellion that tends to be, you know, you've seen it with a lot of pop stars that, you know, have a certain image. They want to rebel against that image. I was no different, you know. Also, you know, Brendan, I'd worked pretty damn hard from about 1985 through to about 1991, 92, you know. And I also just wanted to be a kid that went surfing in Sri Lanka, and I sort of did do that. The problem is I sort of went out you know, in about 1993, 94, and didn't really come home till about 2000,
really?
Or 2002.
Okay.
You know, and it was the birth of my children and meeting my partner, Ange, that really sort of changed my attitude to life.
So talk me through that a little bit. You got a bit too fond of the booze and drugs, yeah?
It was more drugs. I was never really into alcohol because, you know, I saw what effect alcohol had on my dad and his friends. And I'm not suggesting for one second they were, you know, alcoholics. It's just that I always believed at that time that alcohol probably is one of the more aggressive drugs on the planet. And yes, it's so socially acceptable. You know, I always sort of said, you know, I'd rather, as a famous person, walk into a room full of people that were probably stoned than a pub full of drunk, you know,
messy
people. Yeah, messy. Yeah. And yeah, and I guess that sort of led to a very selfish period of my, you know, in the 90s for me, a lot of working out of who I was. I always kept working. And I think, Brandon, I will just sort of say to you this, the good news in my life, having had that period pass for many, many years, 20, 25 years, is I now know what I don't want to do in my life. And also what I will say is, you know, I've always kept very fit in my life, you know, even at the sort of when I got to a bit of a knife edge in the 90s. I'm a firm believer that physical fitness and mental health go hand in hand. So that, along with, you know, meeting a great human being by the name of Ange Donovan, you know, we've been together nearly 30 years, really sort of changed my life in a very positive way.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, you can see clearly life is phases, and sometimes you need someone to yank you out of one phase when it's gone on a bit too long and get you on to the next one. Let's go to your next music choice. Peter Gabriel, In Your Eyes. Why have you chosen this?
Oh, I mean, come on. You know, this was a record. This is like a beautiful landscape. You know, so the album, big time. You know, Don't Give Up with Kate Bush. You know, some of these tracks on this record. I've always been a Peter Gabriel fan. I was a fan of Genesis. I've met Peter Gabriel on a number of occasions. In fact, going back recently, I met him at the Vet around the corner from my house in West London. He'd come in with his Labrador, and I brought in my cat, and we had a great chat. Peter Gabriel also came to my Doing Fine tour in 1991 or 1990 and brought his daughter, because his daughter was a massive fan, and the whole band, you know, at that particular point couldn't believe that Peter Gabriel was at the Hammersmith Apollo or the Odeon, I think it was known at that point.
Yeah.
But look, you know, his musicianship, his layering, his artistry, the canvas that he created.
Jason Donovan's second choice, Peter Gabriel, In Your Eyes.
In your eyes, I see the doorway.
In your eyes,
a thousand churches.
In your eyes,
the resolution.
In your eyes,
of all the fruitless soldiers.
That's Peter Gabriel, In Your Eyes. That's Jason Donovan's second music choice today. So Ange and becoming a father was one thing that kind of saved you from yourself. Did musical theatre kind of save you as well?
I don't know whether it saved me. It certainly gave me a purpose. And if you think about it logically, you know, the combination of what I do, which is act and sing, my history, my dad, who was in musical theatre. You know, Joseph, I guess, was that moment for me, you know, in 1991, where suddenly everyone took me a little bit more seriously. Suddenly I grew up a little bit, you know. And Rocky Horror is probably the most wonderful character. The character of Frank is probably, for me, the biggest revelation of musical theatre that's happened to me in my life, you know.
Why? What has it allowed you to express in yourself, or what satisfaction has it given you?
It's just a great character. You know, Frankenfurter has many layers. You know, it's sort of like a... It's like a Hamlet of musical theatre in a way. Frank, Rocky Horror, it's three chords and the truth.
Why Foo Fighters in times like these?
I love guitar, I love rock, the lyric, it's times like these you learn to live again. You know, what a wonderful sort of airy moment of sort of guitar freedom. You know, there's freedom in this song, and it makes you feel good. And I think that's what music is best. Music is magic, and this is when music can be magical.
What a wonderful way to explain it, and so simply. Okay, here's Jason Donovan's third choice, Foo Fighters, Times Like These. The third of Jason Donovan's eclectic music choices today, Foo Fighters, Times Like These. I'm intrigued that you're a New Order fan. I'm a huge New Order fan myself as well. So growing up in Australia, New Order were a thing, were they?
Massive. You know, well, they were in my circle. I mean, Blue Monday, Thieves Like Us, you know, Love Will Tear Us Apart, Joy Division, you know, and I got to meet... the bass player, God, my
Peter
his
Hook,
name
Peter Hook.
Peter
yeah.
Hook. Oh my yeah. God, I got to meet Peter Hook on a number of occasions recently, particularly doing these sort of retro festivals. And
excellent.
Amazing.
Yeah, you and Peter Hook, I'm imagining that. I'm completely reassessing you, Jason, with everything you say. Listen, let's go to your fourth music choice, which is, again, something entirely different again. When Love Takes Over.
I love a great pop record, and I also love dance music. You know, I think, you know, this is just one of those great melodies. Kelly Rowland delivers a great vocal. You know, it's just a banger, as my kids would say. What a record, you know. It's one of those songs that, again, makes you feel great. There's something music is the closest human beings have to magic. And this is one of those sort of dust sprinkling moments when you can put it on and suddenly your shoulders are down and you're on a beach somewhere and you've got an Aperol spritz and everything's pretty damn good, you know.
Excellent. You sound as well like someone who might have done their time in the clubs back in the day, did you?
Yeah, definitely. In the 90s, for sure.
Yeah. The long night out.
Lots of water.
Of course. All right.
You know, but I appreciate dance music. And I think, you know, even coming back from the 80s, it's interesting to see how it's progressed and become so much more of a mainstream.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's defined pop music for the last few decades now. Okay, here's David Guetta featuring Kelly Rowland's When Love Takes Over, Jason Donovan's fourth choice. That would certainly lift you out of yourself and transcend a bit, wouldn't it? When Love Takes Over, Jason Donovan's fourth choice today. Hey, Jason, what was it like returning to Neighbours for the finale? So I think Kylie was there.
Yeah.
Guy Pearce, Mike was there. Mike got back with Plain Jane Superbrain right at the end. Natalie Imbruglia was there, was she?
Margot Robbie, I think, put in a little appearance.
Was it emotional?
You know, Holly Valance. I wouldn't say it was emotional. I would say there was a lot of sentiment and a lot of nostalgia. And Brendan, I'll be really honest with you, it was something that needed to happen, you know, the recognition. You know, what tends to happen a lot with artists is that they want to put that behind them. I feel the absolute opposite. I want to embrace something that changed my life. And I really push to make sure that people like Guy and Kylie and myself and a number of other people, you know, stood behind what that show did, not just for us, but for Australian television and for the way that people perceive Australians for the world. Because up until that point, all you knew about Australia was Crocodile Dundee and throwing a shrimp on the barbie. And this was, you know, this was suburban Australia being recognised by the rest of the world as a legitimate part of, you know, this planet we live on. It needed to be recognised, and that's why I think we all decided that actually this is a moment we should, you know, wave the flag and celebrate the 35 years of that show.
Fantastic. Jason, it sounds like life is good with you, is it?
Yeah, I do a lot of overthinking. But
do you?
You know,
as you've got older, is it?
It gets more complicated and more wonderful. You know, it's about finding the balance. Brendan, I probably need to learn to relax a little bit more in my life and, you know, work a little bit less maybe sometimes.
Is it that mentality of the actor that, like, if there's a job, you need to take it because there might not be another one? Kind of, is it what Terence kind of drummed into you all those years ago?
No, not so much now. It's more that my children cost me a fortune. They cost me a fortune. I'm not going to lie. I like to live well, man. You know,
I like to enjoy the
lovely things in life. You know, I'm pretty simple. I don't need, you know, 15 bedrooms in a house because I'm only going to end up having to clean, you know, 10 of them. So, you know, but it's about trying to be simple and, you know, life is a balance. It's always difficult to strike the right sort of chord.
Are you getting there?
I'm healthy and you know, and I have a great family. And you know, I still like to keep fit. But maybe I just need to learn to, you know, be a little bit more at ease with not doing too much sometimes.
So come here, when you look back on that now, and I know we did kind of take in an epic swathe of a life there with all those phases and everything and ups and downs and mistakes and the various kind of eras in it. Would you do anything different?
Would I do anything different? No, because I can't control the past. But I, you know, there's elements to my career. Maybe I might have, you know, taken a few more risks. I might have, you know, gone more in the sort of film area in the early part of my life, you know. But, you know, I'm very lucky, you know. I think in life you create your own luck, but I think timing is everything in this planet, this life that we live. You know, and I've been very fortunate to have, you know, great people around me. And it comes down to the foundation and the roots of the tree, you know. It's about trying to create a good foundation, and hopefully, you know, I'm doing that also with my family as much as I have with the family that have brought me up, you know.
Okay. And when you're not doing that, you're having a ball, playing out being a rock star at the moment, every night in the Rocky Horror Show. That's where the demons get out. And it's at the Bordgosh Theatre in Dublin from the 11th to the 16th of August. And for tickets and more information, head to bordgoshenergytheatre.ie. Jason, your final choice is Tim Curry doing Sweet Transvestite from Rocky Horror? Just briefly, why this one?
Well, it's you know, it's the rock star moment, isn't it? It's Richard O'Brien, Richard Hartley at their best. You know, what an opener. You know, for me, every night to walk out to this is a gift. And as I said to you, I get to sort of live that sort of alter ego of a personality or a character that I probably never got to be in my own professional career. So I'm very lucky to play this part, and particularly, you know, in my late, God, I don't like saying my late 50s, but Jesus, it's the truth, 57, in my 58th year.
You finally got to be the bad boy.
Yeah, the red wine. It's like a good red wine. You know, come and watch it sort of just get better with age.
Yes, Jason, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. It's like therapy.
We'll finish up on your final choice. This is Tim Curry and Sweet Transvestite. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Brendan.
How'd you do, I? See, you've met my faithful handyman. He's just a little brought down because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung up by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover.